Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. My next guest is the founder of the Swaddling Coat Asperger Society. He has written many articles and been published in autism magazines, and he's also been part of the I Exist campaign as part of the Autism Act of 2009. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage, and I'll see you on the other side. See you there.
I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking, bottle up my intuition till it's popping out the box that I don't fit in. I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today I'm joined with Gray Rogers, all the way from England. Welcome to the show, Gray.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks.
So let's start off with, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Well, I was diagnosed with what was then called Asperger's 19 years ago now. I was diagnosed after a really bad public mental breakdown in college. It got pretty ugly. Things happened, and yeah, I just couldn't keep going on living a neurotypical life because it was just driving me crazy, to be honest.
All right. So when did you get diagnosed?
Well, 19 years ago now. So yeah, I sort of turned it into an unofficial birthday. I celebrate it every year now.
All right. So when you got diagnosed, did things start to make sense to you?
Yeah, they did make sense because for years I had people react very, because think about weird thing about having a hidden condition is people assume the worst of you. You know, if you struggle, they take it as ignorance and stuff like that. So when I was diagnosed, I finally got a understanding of why I am the way I am and why I react the way I do, and among other things. So I've taken that on board ever since.
All right. So, do you have any sensory issues?
Yeah, I've noticed them more and more in more recent years, because I never really thought about it before. Because, when I was growing up, I had things like my Walkman, cassette players and things like that. So I had the headphones, which I used when I was feeling anxious and stuff. And but in recent years, I've sort of gone back and then re-explored those and discovered, yeah, sometimes I might need sunglasses or some of the more sporty earplugs for going out and about. But yeah, so yeah, I do take that on board now as well.
All right. Have you found your special interest?
Oh, I have lots of special interests, to be honest. Yeah, because I do have an interest in autism and neurodiversity and things like that. And I do have a special interest in science fiction and things like that. I was diagnosed the same year they brought Doctor Who back, so I followed that show ever since, and I actually did a podcast about that this year and talked about my journey with that show. And yeah, and I have other special interests too. My uncle was special forces, and I only just found out just recently. So yeah, I've always had a thing for the, superhero fiction, that kind of stuff. I grew up watching the A-Team and G.I. Joe and things like that, and finding out my uncle was part of that world has sort of reignited my interest in that kind of thing. So that's just some of my special interests at the moment.
Okay. So you had started the Swaddled Coat or Asperger Society. Tell me how that got started and how's it going now?
Well, it started about over 10 years ago now, where it was just me and two other friends. And yeah, and at the time, the autism support group was shutting down, and there was nothing to fill the void, really. Well, a few other things, but nothing specific for autism or neurodiversity, even though that wasn't a name back then. But yeah, well, yeah, it just sort of came up in the conversation down at the pub that maybe I should start a group and do something. At first, I was dubious, but I went with ahead with it. I pull together resources from places I already knew about in the community, and put our heads together and worked with each other and not against each other. And yeah, and now it's been 10 years, it turns out, and we just celebrated our 10th anniversary at a local art gallery, actually.
I mean, that is such a very important message right there, is to work together and not against each other. I mean, I've talked with many people who say that the higher level of autism people don't want to deal with the lower level, but when it comes down to it, we're all on the same. We're all the same. We're all autistic.
Yeah, we're all on the same spectrum, and you meet one person with autism, you met one person with autism, and it's not one size fit all or anything like that. I think the reason why the group has been such a success as it has been is we don't focus too much on we don't focus on the label. We don't say, oh, you're not that autistic, or you're not that vulnerable. We just sort of strip away the labels and the descriptors and focus on the issue. Like, a lot of a lot of vulnerable people struggle with social isolation and depression and those kinds of things. So we just focus more on the issue rather than the label. And it's what's helped the group stay afloat as long as it has, really. Because yeah, we're more the steering group, bringing the experience into it, and and we've been pretty much stable ever since because of it.
People, yeah, I mean, I had a guest on once who said the exact same thing. The problem is labels. You strip away the label, everybody's the same. No one knows what you are. We are human.
Yeah, that's true.
So I understand you've written some articles for the Asperger United magazine and for a couple other places. Tell me about some of those articles and what kind of recognition you've gotten for them and everything else.
Well, I first started creative writing as a way of coming to terms with my condition. I just sort of wrote down how I was feeling at the time, and it got published, to my surprise. So I kept at it for years, and at one point I submitted something for an awareness campaign hosted by the National Autistic Society, and yeah, it was my articles among many things, but it actually led to the creation of the Autism Act of 2009 in the Houses of Parliament, and I didn't even find out that bit until a few years ago.
So that's the that should be the I Exist campaign, am I correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I exist. That's what I wanted to say, basically.
And how did that go? I mean, from what I understand that your role in that was very pivotal to that campaign.
Well, like I said, I didn't find out the whole story until years later. But yeah, it's just something that shows, even a little effort can go a long way.
All right. I understand you are a frontline work you were a frontline or are still a frontline worker during the pandemic and the COVID pandemic. How did you handle that, being someone on the spectrum dealing with everything that's going on?
Well, it was quite a unique time, I found. Yeah, and it was strange at first and scary, and yeah, but I followed the guidance, and I had a lot of support of friends and colleagues and people, and I just sort of reveled in it, really, because at the time they were really cheering for us in the streets and on social media and place and those places, I just kept at it, really. I did what I did. I came in all the times I came in, didn't really get a day off work, and I just sort of reveled in it, and said, you know what, something like this might not ever happen in history again. So I just reveled in it, took it on board, got some nice commemorative badges and T-shirts from the time, It's just something I bring up in conversation now. I was an essential worker during the worst world crisis since World War II, and a lot of people really respond to that in general.
So I understand you were part of the implementation of the adult autism strategy. How is that going and how is it going now?
It's going really well. I think it was something I was invited to coming off my community work, because when the lockdowns happened, all that we had was a website showing what we were doing and well, what we had been doing. But people took notice, and because of that, through Zoom meetings and stuff, I was invited to join the board, really. And yeah, I've stuck with it for the past for a few years, and yeah, just really honored to be sharing a board with so many different people with so many different perspectives, and it's going really well. There's no egotism or narcissism or anything like that. Everyone's respectful, and if there are objections and stuff like that, it's handled in a diplomatic way. So yeah, compared to past bad experiences from before I was diagnosed, it's actually gone really well.
That's very good to hear. I mean, I have a really good friend out there. You're probably aware of who he is. His name is Dan Jones. He runs the Aspie World.
Yeah, I did a podcast interview with early this year, so yeah.
Yeah, he's a really great guy, and he's spearheading a lot of the autism help and everything out there. But anyways, let's talk a little bit about you for a minute. I understand that you came out as non-binary. What made you decide to come out that way?
Well, it was shortly after I was invited onto another board, one that's in real life, not on Zoom, like the partnership board. But yeah, it was on this board, and I was meeting all these really diverse people from different backgrounds and different descriptors and things like that. So we do meet people who identify as being on the LGBT spectrum and things like that, and it just got me wondering about how I identify in the LGBT community. So I did a lot of deep looking, soul searching into that kind of thing, and for various reasons, and I just reached the conclusion that I that yeah, it's weird because when you're growing up, you might have interests that's in girls' toys or girls' things, that kind of thing, and you're sort of put off it because of the bullying or because people tell you you shouldn't like that kind of thing and whatnot, which is strange, really, because some of my ancestors were actually cotton merchants during the Industrial Revolution, so. Yeah, there was a time when sewing was actually a pretty much a man's job, and somehow it just became associated with women. But and yeah, that's another thing that made me really dig deep and think about how I identify. And your emotions don't come from lady parts or man parts or that kind of thing. It's just part of your being, really. So I just ended up reaching the conclusion I was non-binary from all that.
All right. I understand you're an expert by experience consultant. What exactly is an expert by experience, and how did you come to that title?
Well, it was like I said back in it was early 2021 when I started getting approached online about doing things for the board and things, and they just asked me to look over some documents because they wanted to make sure they were neurodiverse accessible. So I looked over the documents. They were actually slideshows for a parent carer teaching course to be held over Zoom, that kind of thing. So I took a good look over the documents, and I gave my feedback. I think I left about 150 notes on the thing. But it was a good document. It was very colourful, had very useful diagrams and things like that, which the neurodiverse community benefit from anyway. And yeah, it was just tweaking it a little, and but it was so it was but my feedback was so invaluable that now it's being used to teach and teach parents and carers about autistic children, and apparently a lot of autistic people become sort of experts by experience anyway, because we're just so passionate about what we care about and our subjects, whatever, we put our hearts and minds to, that it's become a term of endearment, and like an official term of endearment among the medical community over the past few years.
All right. What is the autism scene right now in England, and have you guys gotten any better at resources and helping those who are autistic?
I think awareness has gotten better. There's more and more celebrities, British celebrities, getting diagnosed with autism at a later stage in life, and I think that helps the conversation. Well, one of the reasons I started the group in our town, which is a former mining town, so it's one of those. It's getting better. There's more support groups for the LGBT community and other things like that. But for many years, it was virtually non-existent, and we were actually the first peer support led group in the community, in the region. And that's one of the many reasons why I was brought on to do something more national, like the partnership board. It's getting better, but th there's still a long way to go yet, I feel.
All right. What advice would you give to someone who is dealing with bullying or who find out they are autistic, and or even to a parent who realizes that they are autistic and they're afraid that their child may be autistic?
My best advice would be, bullies don't need a reason to bully. They bully simply because they choose to bully. Yeah, I think a lot of people make the mistake of thinking, if you have a label or look different or sound different or anything, then that's gonna provoke the bully. But that's not true. The truth is, bullies will, they'll pick on you regardless of label or how you act, and it's just an excuse. It's victim blaming, and I've had it for years. People pick it on me because they thought I was gay, even though I'm not, which is kind of strange, because why would you? Well, for years, gay was just another word for strange, but it's changing now. It's and yeah, but sadly, it might be sadly due to certain people, it might be coming back. And but bullies bully. Because they choose to bully, they bully because they don't understand, and it has a, it's about it's always about them rather than the victim, in all honesty.
Now, what about the what would you tell parents who are just finding out they're autistic and worried that their child may be autistic as well? What kind of advice would you give them?
There was a time when the A word was somewhat of a, well, some people reacted to it like it was a death sentence or something like that, like a period of grieving. But no, I think understanding of autism is getting better, and there is still that shock when the child is labeled with the A word. But you have to understand, autism is just one word describing, a million different things at once, to be honest. It's like, like I said earlier, if you met one person with autism, you met one person. And also, I think the support of the parents is more important than ever nowadays, because it's a chance for them to educate themselves about what autism really is, and how they still have a role to play, and understanding their child and teaching their child the way they learn. And also, if a parent does come out, does have an autism diagnosis, and they think their child might be autistic, then I say, well, you're in a good position to talk to your child and share your achievements with that child, and share and inspire each other, and yeah, like that, I say.
Right. Now, what would you tell someone who refuses to use the word Asperger's? I've encountered many of these people who have come at me telling me I shouldn't use the word. It's hurtful to the community, but yet they're uneducated on the whole story.
Oh, there's always more to the story, isn't there? But yeah, it's a tricky subject, and yeah, when we first started, there was no real issue with the term Asperger's. We actually used it because at around the same time, Susan Boyle came out with Asperger's, so it was just sort of our way of saying, "Oh, well, what do? Well, we help people with this condition. What's Asperger's? Oh, Susan Boyle's got it." But yeah, I think it's good. A lot has changed in past few years. The word neurodiverse is being used more and more. So yeah, it's a weird thing, terminology, because it's just, Asperger's was described as mild autism at one point, then it was described as on the spectrum, and then history came up, and someone came up to me and outright refused to word use the word Asperger's or anything. I wouldn't take it personal or anything like that, because they have their own reasons for not using certain words or certain terminology and things like that, because they've clearly educated themselves on what and where the term comes from, what it relates to, and yeah, it's like I said, autism describing a million different things at once. But me myself, I tend to use the word neurodivergent more nowadays, because it's just a term that more and more people are understanding, and yet there's so many people out there who don't understand what it means. So yeah, I think it's all down to personal choice, really, and you just have to sort of respect the views of the other person.
All right, and finally, where can people find out more about you and the Swallow Coat Asperger Society?
It's perhaps swaddling coat, but that's
Swallow
okay.
Coat. Okay, sorry about that.
We have a website. You can find us on Facebook, and if you have trouble remembering the name, you can just put SAS Society or SAS Asperger's, and that tends to pop up. And I'll be glad to give you all the details afterwards.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Gray Rogers. I'm Reed Miles, and I'll see you in the next one. See you there. Thank you, Gray.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye-bye.